What is up, wrestling fans? Welcome to another pay-per-view point edition of the Smarkout Moment Smack Talk podcast. It's time for us to do one of our post shows here for SummerSlam weekend, and since this is Saturday night and we just got done watching NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 3, that's what we're going to be talking about here. We're going to be reviewing what just happened at that show, giving you the results, and breaking down anything else that we want to talk about. And as far as us, who those people are, well, I'm your host as always, Tony Mango, and joining me on this edition, we've got Callum Wiggins.
Oh, I feel like I need a cigarette after that show.
I could use a couple of different things. Cigarette's not one of them, but I am a little hungry. So if somebody gave me something else tube-shaped, maybe like a meatball sandwich, that'd be kind of awesome. And now people are going to run with the tube-shaped thing and leave a bunch of terrible comments. I should have changed my wording on that one.
Oh, I wonder what tube-shaped thing they'll talk about. It's probably candy sticks or something like that.
Yeah, candy cigarettes. We'll do that.
Yeah.
Back in the day, people used to grab those and they'd be like, you're going to learn how to smoke by using that. I used to eat those all the time. Never touched a cigarette in my life. So, ha, the exception that proves the rule. In probably many different ways that science would want to test out. Yeah, it was a good event, though. I was going into this with a little bit of expectations of it being pretty decent. And I'm happy to say that I wasn't proven wrong when it comes to that. They had a lot of surprises. They had some that maybe I'm not too on board with, but it's sort of in that boat where it's like, well, maybe they'll kind of do something different that's really interesting. And some other surprises I thought were really cool. And really, I mean, when I did my highlights and low points breakdown for Bleach Report, I only really had two low points. And the first thing of which is, coincidentally, the first thing we need to talk about, the pre-show. Not a good pre-show.
Yeah, it wasn't great. It wasn't particularly memorable. I do like the fact that when you talk about an NXT show, the kind of issues that you have with it are usually just little nitpicks here and there. Like, oh, they probably could have done this slightly better, or I didn't really like this thing that didn't really impact the overall value of the card. Whereas when you're talking about a WWE event, there's usually at least one thing which is just like, oh, what the fuck were they doing? And this is just completely terrible.
Yeah, like we were saying before we started recording, the idea that an NXT TakeOver being good can sometimes be a really good sign for whatever that show is that's coming up next, whether it be like the Royal Rumble or SummerSlam or, you know, whatever. But a lot of the times it gives you that antsy feeling where you're like, man, the NXT show was good. And history has shown when the NXT show is good, the regular main roster one's going to suck. And I'm really nervous tomorrow night about SummerSlam. And if we talk about the little nitpicks that we have here tonight, you know, spoiler alert, we both like the show quite a bit. Tomorrow night with SummerSlam, I got a feeling there's going to be a whole, like, and another thing, what the fuck is it? You know, it's going to nights.
I mean, I'm sure
that it's not going to be the case.
Well, I'm sure we'll appeal to the other section of our audience that like it when we bitch and moan about stuff, whereas this side will be a bit more like, oh, this was amazing and this was really good. And so you can get this all out of the way now, all by positivity. Then we can turn into bitter fucks when we watch SummerSlam.
That'll be the balance, because on this one we'll get comments of like, how come you didn't like, what are you, like, just sucking NXT's tit here, like that kind of thing. And then tomorrow night it'll be like, this is a problem. Oh, what, you just don't like anything, do you? Like, you can never win. If you like Marvel and you bash a DC movie, it's because you're paid off by Marvel. If you say a DC movie's good and a Marvel movie's bad, it means that you're paid off by DC. It's like, you know, there's always that kind of 50-50. Although, thankfully, nowadays, it's more like you can only like NXT or WWE or both. And if you don't like one of them, it's a problem, as opposed to being like TNA versus WWE. Because nobody cares about GFW. Nah. So we don't get that at the very least, to the whole like, well, you guys are just WWE marks. It's like, no, nobody's a GFW mark.
No. Well, going back to the pre-show, I think if I had to sum up this pre-show in one word, it would be awkward.
There was a lot of awkward stuff. That's right. That's a good word for it, because we had Kurt Angle mispronouncing Asuka's name.
Yeah, that was bad.
I think that I had called her Asuka one time, back when I had no idea who the hell she was. And I know that I pronounced Shinsuke Nakamura incorrect for a good, like, couple of weeks or so, because that, to me, was just since Shinsuke Nakamura. But he's been in the company long enough that he should know Asuka's name, you know?
I think Angle's struggled a little bit on the microphone. He's mispronounced names constantly during his time as Raw General Manager. Other than that, he's doing fine, but he just can't seem to get people's names right.
Thankfully, just some of them that are the easier ones, he hasn't screwed up. He hasn't been like, you know, you're going to go one-on-one against Seth Rollins. Or like,
you'll be facing John Cena tonight.
Right, yeah. Like, he hasn't gotten that bad, but it was pretty awkward to hear him just be like, I'm here to check out Asuka. And it's like, ooh, well, you're not going to sign her, aren't you? Because you don't know her name. That was a little bit weird. Bayley getting some kind of booze again.
She's getting that a lot recently. I think part of me is feeling like it's just people jumping on the bandwagon of, oh, she's just this ultra white meat baby face, so we've got to boo her because they think they're cool. But another part of that is the fact that she's been booked so poorly on the main roster. I can see why people were turning on her.
Now, in the comments below, everybody, make sure you let us know, are you white meat or dark meat?
Well, speaking of dark meat, Big E was also on the show.
He was the best part.
Yeah, he was good.
He was so great putting his feet up on there, just being like, I'm going to need a minute and stuff. And I did actually like Neville's appearance on there. That was pretty interesting.
I loved it. I thought people... I saw some comments where I was doing the live tweeting of people saying, oh, this is really awkward, this Corey Graves and Neville interaction. But I thought it was really, he showed really good character work. He's still fitting into the mold of someone who's so bitter and angry about losing his championship. And it just works. He wasn't going to just drop that for this show, which seemingly was what Baron Corbin did.
Yeah, he was a strange one. As was the whole thing with Carmella and Sasha Banks was a little bit weird because I kind of wanted them to sort of trash talk each other a little bit because one's babyface and one's a heel. And instead it was just kind of like, yay, sisterhood. Mae Young Classic is great. Like, you know.
Yeah, they were all a bit too friendly towards each other. But I think that's fine. They've got similar characters, even though one of them is like beloved by the audience and one is hated.
I was going to say, and the other one's Sasha Banks. But
yeah. Fair enough.
Lita on there. Lita's Lita. Sam Roberts is Sam Roberts. You know, nothing really special when it comes to that. But one thing with Charlotte Caruso that I laughed at, which it was just a little, maybe a Freudian slip, maybe just, you know, a random botch, was she's like, now we're going to go backside here or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like...
I really didn't like the parts where all of them started plugging at once. Like, you go from Charlie Caruso starts plugging something on the WWE Network, and then it goes to Sam Roberts, and then it goes to Lita, and then it goes to Corey Graves. It just felt a little bit, wow, this is so scripted.
They've been doing that the past couple events, and it is a little strange, because it's almost like, all right, you've been queued up to say that SummerSlam is tomorrow, and you've been queued up for the Mae Young Classic bracketology, and you've been queued up to say, remember, it's $9.99 a month, and you get your free month, and whatever. And it's sort of like them doing the assembly line and just kind of like none of them could have just done it on their own, you know?
Yeah, I thought that's what like Charlie's there for, as the host.
Right.
All the rest of them are just analysts. So they talk about the matches and she sells the product.
And Sam Roberts can just kind of be there with a nasally sort of voice. I like Sam Roberts, by the way, but somebody pointed it out to me and I can't unsee it. They've said Sam Roberts reminds them of Kyle's cousin from South Park.
Yeah,
I'm just kind of like, oh, damn it, you just ruined him for me. So now I ruined it for all of you listening.
No, I saw people comparing him to Sideshow Bob's son, Gino.
That's another good one. He's got the hair for it.
Yeah, exactly.
I do like Sam Roberts, though. If I had to pick between him and Peter Rosenberg, I like Rosenberg a little bit better. But I like how they brought those two guys into the mix as of late. Like, it's different than just having, say, I don't know, David Otunga. Well, I like Jerry Lawler being in there, but Otunga, nah. Give me Roberts over Otunga.
Yeah, it's good to have someone who's like slightly outside of the WWE family involved in that. I'm kind of wondering whether they will actually ever end up bringing Dave Meltzer onto it or something of that ilk.
Maybe, you never know.
Just someone who's close enough to WWE that he'd probably be okay doing it, but just isn't actually in the fold, so he might talk a bit more candidly about stuff.
It's a mark out moment. Just saying, WWE.
Yeah, get Wago on there. Just see how many like C-bombs he drops.
Oh, God, imagine that. Wago pops up and they're like, so what do you think of this match? And he'll be like, I don't know. Fake and gay. Well, the first match of the night, one of my favorite, possibly my favorite match of the whole night, actually. Maybe. I mean, it's debatable. Johnny Gargano against Andrade Cien Almas. Very, very good opener, I thought. Great way to start off, just by having a lot of energy behind it and just going out there having a kick-ass match. And I literally have no complaints, nothing to write down, that I was just kind of like, oh, it was a little bit weird, or like, no, I should have done that better. I loved it from start to finish.
Absolutely agree. I'd probably say this was the match of the night as well. Takeovers do seem to have a tendency of starting off really strong and then the other matches just can't follow it. But obviously, on a card with so many good matches at this one, it wasn't like standing head and shoulders above any other one. But I think for a match that had virtually no build, it delivered on every single level. Gargano was brilliant as a babyface. His selling is fantastic as always. The crowd are really into him the whole way through. Almas is hitting his groove now as a heel. He's finally got a character that really suits him. Zelina Vega was smoking hot.
Yeah, she's always good to see.
Yeah, and she's proving to be an effective manager, which is better than just someone who just stands in the corner. She's actually impacting his matches and making him work harder and making him better, and provided the fitting distraction for the finish. And harking back to Gargano's connections to DIY, that's the perfect way of like keeping that feud still alive while extending this feud going forward.
Yeah, because I mean, we don't know when Ciampa is going to be back, and that could be anywhere from close enough to Houston, where maybe we can get a match between those two at Houston, but we could very well not get a match until 2018 at some point. So they need to do something to kind of remember that kind of upcoming feud and just refresh our memories. And that's a good way to do it, because it's something that doesn't really happen all that often. It's not, you know, she stands up on the ropes, distracts the referee, and then somebody gets a roll up. Or she has somebody else come out to beat down on Gargano when he's on the outside of the ring. And, you know, like, it's not one of the ones we normally get. So that was a really nice touch, I thought. That was really good.
Yeah, well, yeah, it was great. I'd say Gargano looked ripped. He's been clearly putting a lot of time and effort in the gym and in the performance center, because he looked like he had a 10-pack, let alone 6-pack.
I didn't actually notice that. I'm going to have to go back and check that out.
I'll just say he might get a bit more support in the Sexy Superstar tournament in the future.
Yeah, that's true.
If he keeps those looks. Yeah, and he did look like more defined than he has done previously. And that's a good thing, because if he keeps on this trajectory of being like a really good babyface in peril and then a really good like underdog for the crowd to get behind, he could be pushing for the NXT title really soon. Although there's a large queue now forming, as we'll talk about later.
Yeah, there's something, at least one major person that gets in the way of that. But again, we got a couple more matches to talk about first, but the one that followed that up with first off, Corey Graves comes out. He's the special guest commentator. I was a little bit surprised about that, since he had no connection at all to anybody in the Authors of Pain or Sanity.
Oh, I was going to mention, just before we move on to this match, the actual start of the NXT TakeOver, there was Code Orange, I think they're called, the heavy metal band that was playing at the start. What did you think of that?
Waste of 5 minutes.
Yeah, I like the idea. The idea was good. It was different, and showing the video package being played, I thought the video package was well produced. I just think the band was terrible.
If it would have been part of the pre-show, I wouldn't have been against it.
Like the end of the pre-show, like the very end of the pre-show.
Yeah.
Just to kick it off. But I think it's worth experimenting with. It was one of the issues I had with it, but once again, it's just a small issue. Musical performances in WWE never really mix too well.
They're kind of opinion. Like give or take. And actually, never mind. I was going to say let's jump ahead, but let's keep on track here.
Yeah, sure.
Instead, Corey Graves comes out. He is the special guest commentator for this NXT Tag Team Championship match. And we get the Authors of Pain coming out looking like straight out of some Syrian conflict or something. That was like, all right, this is a little creepy. The way that our fucking countries, well, my country at the very least, is acting lately and stuff. I'm like, I don't like seeing this. But it was cool. That was the
thing. They looked pretty intimidating.
If this
would
have been like a wrestling thing where I know that this is all fake, if that would have just been like, you know, seeing that in the middle of a football game, I would have been like, oh fuck, something's going down.
It could have been worse. They could have come out in like giant white hoods.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Well, if this was NXT TakeOver Charlottesville, it'd be a different story. But I do like that because it gives them a little bit more of an edge, and they're going up against Sanity, who's got this whole like we're crazy kind of thing. So it was sort of like, oh, we got like the militant fucking monster heels against the crazy lunatic heels. And they start the whole match off well before it gets even started. They're attacking each other, so it takes a little while. And something that was pretty interesting in this that I liked quite a bit was their switch up where Eric Young replaced Killian Dane. Because I don't think I've ever seen that before, where they said, like, yeah, he hasn't been tagged in, so he just takes his place.
Yeah, it was a very original thing. I just don't get the logic behind it. Oh, yeah, I'm going to swap out for our 300-pound undefeated monster, and I'm going to take his place because I have a better shot of taking down these two giant superstars. The logic didn't make sense to me, but the actual idea itself of one of them swapping out and pretending they were in the match and then another one actually getting involved instead. I'm surprised like the New Day has never done that.
Yeah, now they can't, because now if they do that on like Sunday night with SummerSlam, it'll be like, you're just biting it from NXT. They thought of it first. Big E was there. We know that he watched.
He's taking down notes.
Yeah. I did like that, though, and another good highlight to me was Nikki Cross jumping through, well, she didn't jump through the table with Akam, but they did the whole thing with Killian Dane tackling them, and it sort of made it to where it was like, the Authors of Pain lose, but they lost because it was 4-on-2, essentially.
Yeah, it's quite weird. It's a, I mean, I really liked the match. I thought the match was really good. It was much better than I expected it to be. But heel on heel dynamic, it made it a little bit weird to go through. You didn't really know which side was on the babyface, because Sanity were taking advantage of the numbers, but it was the Authors of Pain that were like beating them down, and it was Sanity that got the hot tag, so it was, you didn't really know who you're supposed to be cheering for. So in the end, I was just kind of cheering for both of them. I thought Alexander Wolfe shone in this match, which I was surprised about, because I wasn't expecting him to be as active and as, well, impressive as he was.
Yeah, because he really was the linchpin for everything.
Yeah, he was the one that was keeping it all together. He was the one that got the hot tag in, and he was taking down both members of the Authors of Pain. He hit this brilliant German suplex on one of the authors. Like, just getting this 300-pound guy over his head is pretty impressive.
And you know what? I haven't really paid too much attention to Wolf lately, because he's really like, he's the black sheep of the bunch.
Yeah.
And this made me pay a little bit more attention to him now. Like, I still don't think that he's like going to be the one that, if he had to pick one to go somewhere, then, you know, it's still, I'm okay with him being a tag team champion right now. And I was rooting for the Authors of Pain originally. So the fact that they were able to have a title change, and the team that I liked better losing, and I'm not, like, salty about it, another big thumbs up. And like you said, match was good. Can't complain about the match either. Then we also had a really interesting thing at the end of this, where Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly pop up. They attack both tag teams.
Yep.
And it starts to go, all right, well, I guess we know who our next challengers are going to be.
Yeah, they looked really good as well. They were very aggressive. They're both, when they've been performing in Ring of Honor and anywhere on the independent scene, they've always shown very aggressive submission-based offense, which counteracts the fact that they're quite small and quite lean. The fact that they essentially just rip and tear at any body part that they feel is exposed, and will mean they can actually like stand on an even keel with both of these teams.
I have no ties to the ROH guys and stuff like that. And I had mentioned before that Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly are just sort of like these bland, kind of generic guys to me. And yeah, like they do seem like we can get like them kind of standing in the same ring with them.
Yeah, immediately. Yeah, I mean, they made an impression straight away, which is always like a good thing. You don't want somebody just appearing and not really doing much of note. They took out the two best teams on NXT right now, even though they just had a match with each other and were already beaten down. But they wore them out quite impressively. They stood tall at the end of it. They immediately set their sights on the tag team championships. It's a good way to debut, even though obviously they've already had matches with Aleister Black on TV. This was the way to bring them together as a unit. I wonder what their name's going to be, because they used to go by Red Dragon in Ring of Honor, but I don't know whether they can still carry that name on.
Yeah, that might be like, if Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish are their actual names, then they don't really have anywhere that they can say like, well, I can't use that name, that kind of thing. But Red Dragon, that's probably owned by ROH. So, I don't know. And then another thing is, you know, you were talking about Authors of Pain being heels and Sanity being heels. It's like, well, O'Reilly and Fish come out, they attack both of those, and it's like, I guess they're heels too now?
Yeah, it's
interesting. They were baby faces originally.
Well, I guess NXT does have a couple of babyface tag teams with Heavy Machinery and the Street Profits.
Team 6-1, whenever they can come back.
Yeah, so maybe it's fine to have another heel tag team come into the ranks. It just seems odd that all three of them will be feuding over the titles and all three of them appear to be heels.
Yeah. And by the end of the day, we got pretty much a confirmation that they're heel, but more on that later again, too. Jim Ross then came out. Another special guest commentator.
Cool, just that
JR is back.
They just do it so well. It's just like they bring out a little surprise that gets everyone slightly excited, even though obviously the match that he came out for was Hideo Itami versus Aleister Black. It, obviously, JR didn't have too much ties to it other than the fact that he's commentated on New Japan stuff. But it's just nice to give the audience something to like liven them up a little bit between matches.
And because to follow suit right afterward was going to be another musical performance.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like Aleister Black's theme, but it's not in the sense of me thinking that it doesn't fit him. It's just, like, I don't like that type of music. So
it's understandable.
When you've got somebody that's like, it's like, I don't have a clue what the fuck they're saying. And it's kind of annoying to listen to, but at the same time, when you have somebody come out and they do their entrance with like a live performance, it does at least subtly make you think that it's more special. So yeah, that gave me the impression that it was like, okay, we're at like a big NXT event and they're giving Aleister Black his big entrance, relatively speaking. And he looks like they've been treating this guy like he's a star. He's been booked to be undefeated. But he is undefeated, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's still
undefeated. He's been, you know, kicking people's heads off, and they've been treating him as, like, a specialty kind of, we'll put him on, like, two episodes of NXT before a takeover kind of a thing. So, by the end of this, I'm thinking to myself, maybe the Authors of Pain come up to the main roster, and maybe Aleister Black just moves up to the main roster now, too.
I wouldn't be surprised. They've clearly got a lot invested in him. They're treating him as something special, which is something that NXT does far better than WWE. And part of that is due to the fact that WWE is so overexposed with the amount of time they have to use. NXT only has an hour a week to fulfill. So Aleister Black doesn't have to appear on every single show. When he does have to appear, he's treated like a big deal. He's given important wins, but it doesn't take away from the people that he's facing most of the time. They're really handling him well.
Now, do you think that he should have won this match, or do you think it should have been Hideo Itami? Because for those who don't know, Aleister Black did win. He's still undefeated.
I think both of them could have benefited from the win, but I think Itami looked great in defeat still. He was constantly like shouting about during the match that he needs to get respect from people, and he was kicking him really hard. They're wrestling quite stiff. I think the crowd was slightly subdued during this match, and I don't think it was due to the match being bad. I really enjoyed this match, but it seemed to be like a New Japan style, almost.
Yeah, a little bit. They were striking each other pretty damn hard sometimes.
Yeah, it was a mixture of like the strong style, the points where Itami and Black were like exchanging palm strikes and things like that. And when Itami was lifting him up and like screaming in his face, saying "respect me" and things along those lines, that's a very New Japan way of like doing storytelling during a match to make up for the fact there's not really any story going into it.
Yeah, so, yeah. I agree with you about the idea that he did look good in his defeat, because I would have been fine with Itami winning, yet if Itami's main character trait is going to be "I'm losing, but you're not giving me enough respect," then it's cool for him to lose again and just kind of take this loss and bitch and complain the next time around. And I don't know who he'll end up starting a feud with, but I do think that this feud is over. I don't think that we're going to get a continuation.
No, I think that's probably a good way of ending it. He keeps Black as a special attraction as well. I think he looked good as well. There's one slight issue with the match, which was when he tried to do a springboard moonsault and essentially got too much air. So he just went straight up as opposed to straight across the ring. So Itami had to run forward to catch him, but that was just a minor issue.
Yeah, so Black wins. Another great match. Nothing to complain about as far as I'm concerned. Anything that stood out to you that would have been, like, problematic? Other than, you know, the little hiccup there.
No, nothing at all. I think Itami looks more dangerous and more impressive in the ring as he has ever done since he joined NXT. I think he's on an upward trajectory now, which he hasn't really been since he debuted. So that's good to see, even though he did lose this match. Aleister Black is still a big attraction, a big star. I think they've got really big things planned for him, whether that is debuting straight away on the main roster. But obviously, at certain points, they went to the crowd and saw Daniel Bryan and Kurt Angle scouting. And they were surrounded by, like, No Way Jose and
Peyton Royce and Billy Kay.
Yeah.
And Roderick Strong, I think, might have been in there.
Yeah. Yeah. So that might give more of an indication of who they're bringing up. I don't think Strong should come up yet. I think he's still got stuff to do in NXT.
Yeah.
But Noah Jose,
Billy Kay, though, they're on my list. I think that they're coming up.
Yeah, and I think Noah Jose could fit in on the main roster as well. I think he's more of a character-based wrestler, so he doesn't need to be as polished and as good in the ring as a lot of other people in NXT. And he's I've always thought he's like a really good opening match act. Something along the lines of the Funkasaurus, but good.
Speaking of the idea of people getting called up, we know that one person that more than likely at this point isn't going to be called up is Asuka, because she retained her NXT Women's Championship against Ember Moon. Very shocked about that.
Yeah, I was surprised, but pleasantly surprised. I was rooting for Asuka the entire time. I love the fact that she's still undefeated. I love the fact that she's now pushing past 504 days as women's champion. It's an amazing run. It's approaching 2 years. Like, I think it's past a year and a half now at that point. So that's how you build a champion. It's a anomaly in the world of WWE nowadays, and that makes her stand out.
Yeah, I will say that I am sort of disappointed that Asuka retained, but I'm also reserving judgment for that, because it all sort of depends. If you tell me that Asuka's going to go up against anybody that's on the NXT roster right now at Houston, I don't think any of them deserve to be the champion, and any of them are actually even like a solid enough contender. And I also sort of think that if they do end up giving this to Ember Moon, they should have given it to her here and not in Houston.
I agree with that. I think there's a lot of people in NXT that aren't up to the level of Asuka, and Ember Moon is the closest thing to it. So if you were going to get...
Sonya Deville's not going to be ready for that, you know?
No. You can't give it to Sonya. Ruby Riott's not quite there yet.
Cross already did her stuff.
Mm.
Liv Morgan already had her shot. Aaliyah's nothing right now.
No. Well, that leads to the thought that if Asuka is staying in NXT for longer, which we presume she is because she's still the champion, that it might be the Mae Young Classic that decides her next opponent.
That's the only two things I can think of. Either we get Shayna Baszler or Kairi Sane, whoever ends up winning the Mae Young Classic, whichever one that is my go-to number one contender.
Kairi Sane, yeah.
I'm assuming Kairi Sane will end up winning.
That would be a big one for me. I think that would be something that get a lot of crossover appeal.
And it would be kind of like the first time ever you get like two Japanese women against each other, and it's sort of like, to certain people, it'll be like, Asuka's fighting her clone, like, you know what I mean?
Well, I think two Japanese women have fought each other in Japan before. Just say.
Nah, not in Japan either. Never no, in the history of the universe. or at least in the WWE universe when it comes to that. Actually, you know what? Has that ever happened in WWE? That was just joke right then, but it might not have happened.
I think they've done... There was a big Survivor Series, like, 4-on-4 tag team match in the mid-90s when Alundra Blaze was women's champion. I think they drafted a lot of women in from Japan because their women's division was essentially nothing at that point.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They probably had them on opposite sides.
And everybody was just kind of like, oh, it's Alundra Blaze's team versus the people who will lose because they're not in Alundra Blaze's team.
I actually think Alundra Blaze's team lost that one. Because I think,
really?
I think they were facing Nakano
or something?
I think it was Bull Nakano or Bertha Faye. It was one of those two.
Bertha Faye. God, I don't remember that. Yeah, the match, though, itself, and speaking of option number two to me, I think, is we just get Asuka coming up to the main roster and she just relinquishes the belt.
I'd be fine with that option as well.
I don't think I would really like that too much, but it sort of depends on... I don't know anything about Kairi Sane or Shayna Baszler, so I don't know if I really like either of them. And we know that they're the finalists of the Mae Young Classic. Spoiler alerts, they've already done it. It's been out there for weeks. Don't think I'm really going to be shocking anybody by saying that out loud now. But I don't know if I would support either of them as being champion over Asuka, so I have to reserve my judgment for that kind of a thing. But if they do have her move up to the main roster, then we could get anything for Houston. We could get Ember Moon versus Mandy Rose, for all I fucking know.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind the relinquish idea. I think it's fine if you have a caliber of athlete, which is too much, to the point where, okay, you need to go up to the main roster because no one on our level can beat you, but we need you to take the championship back. They did it with Paige. I don't think Paige was the right person to do it with, but they did it, and it didn't really hurt the prestige of the championship. I don't think it hurts if Asuka relinquishes it, and then you have Ember Moon and Ruby Riott or something along those lines fight for the title.
And I hope that Ruby Riott does not win that.
I'd be okay with it. Because I don't really want Ember Moon to win it based on winning a tournament. I think if she wins it, she has to beat someone for it, like beat someone who's already the champion for it, just to prolong her underdog story a little bit more. I thought Ember Moon was brilliant in this match.
Yeah, she was amazing. And Asuka's been somebody who is very reliable to have a great match, so I figured it would be great. And I thought that it was going to be the match of the night. And if I'm going to say that anything beats that, it would be the Gargano and Ciampa thing. But I do think that if you're going to say something's the match of the night as far as both quality and importance, this hands down beats Gargano and Almas.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think in terms of technical ability, this outdid Bayley versus Sasha Banks from 2 years previously. But I think there wasn't enough heat into it just due to the fact that both Banks and Bayley had long, drawn-out stories. I don't think Ember Moon's quite there yet. Asuka is, but I think the fact that Ember Moon is a little bit still quite fresh in people's anticipations of them, the fact that she's not as over as Asuka is, not on her level in terms of the kind of aura and charisma that she possesses. Thing that took away from in terms of the character work, but in terms of actual between the ropes physicality and the sort of moves and transitions they were pulling off, I think it exceeded what we've previously seen in NXT.
I think that this was better than Asuka Bayley last year.
Oh yeah, it definitely was. I think the Asuka and Bayley one felt too much like a foregone conclusion. This one, you had no idea who was going to win, and actually most people, if you would have asked them, probably would have said Embers would win, so it had a shock conclusion to it as well.
Yeah, I was actually pretty shocked about that, because they started doing all that, those exchanges where it was kind of like she's blasting Asuka with like a certain kick after breaking out of the Asuka lock and stuff, and I'm like, oh, damn, she's going to win it with this. So then, okay, damn, they're going to do this. Okay, whatever. And I'm like, fuck, I'm getting tired of getting surprised here. Like,
yeah. One of the things I also loved about this match, which is actually a trend throughout the night, was that it didn't start with the headlock.
Yeah.
You kind of get this too much with WWE of like, oh, we've been building up this bit of rivalry between these two people, and then they just start off with a headlock. Like, to start with regular grapple, regular chain wrestling. Thing. Okay, so you guys, like, hate each other so much, and yet you're just going to wrestle properly at the start. Just going to show respect. I mean, it was fine doing it for the champ. God, you've got me saying champa now as well. He's not there. He was never there.
Champa's one of the highlights of the night.
Yeah.
Sitting at his home.
Yeah. I say it was fine doing that for the Gargano-Almas match, because there were no stakes involved in that. They hadn't wrestled before, so it's fine to have, like, a feeling out process for that one. Whereas in the other matches, there'd been like some quite a fair amount of aggression between them. So they just started off really quickly with that high kick to start with in the case of this match. So, yeah, I thought that was a really good way of starting it. And the fact that Asuka kicked out of the Eclipse was shocking. I did not expect that at all. I thought that was the end. But then the fact that they wrestled for a few more minutes after that as well, when it wasn't just Asuka getting her locked in as soon as she kicked out or anything along those lines, it just right. It built up really nicely towards the finish.
Yeah, I really dug this match, and I'm going to have to consider putting it into my list of one of the best matches of the year so far.
Yeah, I think there's two matches on this card that could fit into that. The Gargano match and the...
Off the top of my head, I don't know what I have listed on there now that I'm thinking about that.
Well, I have, well, just speaking personally, I have Cena Styles from the Royal Rumble. I have...
I think that one might be on there too.
Yeah. I have the Revival versus DIY versus the Authors of Pain from Dallas.
I've got that. I've got Bate Dunne, Chicago as well.
Yeah,
and Reigns, Strowman, the ambulance match.
Oh, that's a good one as well. And yeah, I think I'd also put Authors of Pain versus DIY in the ladder match as well. That's quite a lot from NXT.
I only have one listed down for worst. House of Horrors match.
I'm trying to think of... Oh, no, I've got... it's either, for me at the moment, it's Wyatt versus Orton at WrestleMania, or it's Bayley versus Alexa Bliss at Extreme Rules.
Oh, yeah, I need to write that down. Bayley versus... Alexa Bliss, Extreme Rules. Yeah, that was pretty awful. I don't know why I don't have that on the list. Now I have it on the list. Okay. 2017 awards in the making.
You got a preview here. Yeah.
That was nice to see Ember Moon getting a round of applause at the end of it. Nice way to kind of finish that, too.
Do you think that might be an indication that she's moving up to the main roster?
Usually it is.
I heard a lot of people talking about the fact that maybe Asuka's staying down and they're going to move Ember Moon up instead.
I hope that's not the case, though. Well, I mean, I don't think Ember Moon's ready, and I think if they bring her up, they're going to fuck her over, because I don't imagine they're going to bring her up to Raw or SmackDown and have her actually be able to do anything, you know? I think Peyton Royce and Billie Kay are better suited, because they can actually have, like, feuds. Ember Moon's not good with promos.
No, I do agree with you, but I think it would be... You could tell quite an interesting story, just... In my head just now, just thinking about it, if you have Ember Moon go up and then you have her go up for a few months and then she ends up winning either the Raw or SmackDown Women's Championship, depending on which show she goes on to, and then she holds it for a little while, and then you have Asuka come up and beat her for it, and then you just start building up this rivalry of Asuka's the only person that can kind of is in her head and is the one that's constantly holding her back and stopping her from being the best.
Yeah, like, Ember Moon can go up to the main roster, she starts to get a whole lot of steam, she builds up success, and Asuka eventually comes barreling through, and she's kind of like, oh, you think you're hot shit because you're on the main roster? Well, you never fucking beat me in NXT, and now I'm here, so you're fucked.
Yeah.
That would be good. I'd like that.
But it would involve some long-term planning, and as soon as you go from NXT to WWE, that starts to fade away slightly.
And Asuka would have to start off the promo with, you're still not ready for Asuka. And it's like, oh man, that was 3 years ago. What the fuck? That kind of a thing. Speaking of that, about the repetition of some of those things, man, I got sick and tired of hearing that fucking No Fear song.
Yeah, it was going on quite a while.
I don't know what the lyrics are, but it's just kind of like, my bad, something, something, da 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 da. And it's like, stop playing this for every fucking 4 minutes or so in the pre-show and stuff. Man, not my thing. I usually like a lot of the songs that WWE puts as their, like, theme for the event, whatever. Like that that Imagine Dragons song that they just had for Battleground or something. I'm like, oh, I like this song. I'll download that immediately. This is not one of them. I guess it's like, yeah, hard to hear that thing.
Yeah, I usually put them all into some sort of playlist because I usually like these metal songs they put into it. This one was just a bit too much for me. It's not really that memorable either. Like, I think at the time I wasn't enjoying it, and now that the event's passed, I really don't remember what it was.
Do you like the new NXT theme, by the way?
No, I preferred the old one.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, this one's not bad, but I preferred the old theme. And speaking of old themes I preferred, Drew McIntyre was in the next match with Bobby Roode for the
nice
NXT Championship.
There.
I had my moments.
Yeah, he takes the title. I was a little bit shocked. I thought that we'd end up getting Bobby Roode retaining here, but as soon as they did that Asuka Ember Moon match first, I was like, uh-oh. I think we might get a title change. But I still thought that it might stick with Roode, because I figured Adam Cole would be coming in as a babyface. And it would be like, all right, well, Drew McIntyre fails, Bobby Roode's next opponent, Adam Cole. Nope, Drew McIntyre wins the match, and Adam Cole comes out with Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish to attack Drew McIntyre. So he's going to be a heel. And I guess we're getting McIntyre-Cole at Houston.
Oh, that would be a decent match. I'm glad that Cole's come in as a heel. He works so much better as a heel than as a babyface. He plays this arrogant, stuck-up prick really well. And
see, I didn't know that, so that's why I thought it was just going to be like, here's our indie babyface coming in, you know?
Don't get me wrong, he's not bad as a babyface, but he comes across as really cocky. He's actually quite childish as a character. His character, I mean, he was teaming with the Young Bucks most of the time, so of course he's quite childish, and he pushes the envelope quite a bit with his humour. And I think it works well with this combination with Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish. Him and Kyle O'Reilly used to be tag team partners before Kyle O'Reilly went with Bobby Fish. So there's a bit of like synergy there. I could imagine potentially Roderick Strong joining them as this big Ring of Honor collective.
Yeah, because Strong does have real, well, pardon the pun, but real strong ties to ROH.
Yeah, so you have these four all together as like this collective of people from that used to be like the biggest names in the independent scene, and they start taking over NXT, pardon the pun. But yeah, I could see that being the storylines heading into Houston, having all of them challenging for titles. You don't really have like a Ring of Honor woman though, who's in NXT at the moment, so you couldn't really have them, someone going for the NXT Women's Championship.
What are some of the women that are in Ring of Honor right now? I know Jessie Brooks is one because she's been working with OTW quite a bit.
I'm trying to think of some that been in there recently. You have
what's the name of that really, really good looking one? Something Bordeaux.
Scarlett Bordeaux?
Yeah, she's really hot.
Yeah.
So I like her.
You have Kelly Klein, who I think's been kind of built as undefeated in Ring of Honor, who would be a good fit, but I've seen a few of her matches and I'm not particularly impressed. You could have
Karen Q, I know her. She's been working with OTW before. Mm-hmm. And Deanna, she's worked with OTW. I've met her before.
Could have Taylor Hendricks. She's not attached to any promotion at the moment, and she kind of made her name in like TNA and Ring of Honor, so she would fit.
Oh, Amber O'Neill's in there.
Hmm.
Well, she's got a connection, at the very least, with Gallows.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Man,
so,
Leon, I know that name. Well, I know that ass. I don't know some of the names, though. Hanya the Howling Huntress.
Yeah, I'm not as familiar with a lot of the Ring of Honor, because they have a Women of Honor there, so I'm slowly getting more familiarized with it, but you'd probably have to ask like Jordan or Gabby to have a bit more of a lowdown.
Jordan, Gabby, tell us. Tell us in the comments below. Yeah, I mean, that would be kind of cool to see some kind of a stable brought in like that, and then eventually maybe see them kind of feud with Sanity, because you could get like Adam Cole versus Eric Young, O'Reilly and Fish against like Dane and Wolf, and then whoever the woman that they can bring in like that, then they can kind of make her be like the Nikki Cross equivalent and do like a little 4-on-4 sort of thing for a little bit. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that's cool. But in terms of the match itself, it's quite odd to say that because it was a good match, but it was the weakest of the night.
Yeah, the one that I thought was the worst match of the night. And that's not to say that it was bad. It was still good.
This was like a good WWE match, but it just wasn't up to the standards of the other matches. It just felt too, like, standard almost.
It had a tough act to follow, too.
Yeah, it was like a paint-by-the-numbers thing.
You start off with, like, a really good match with Gargano and not Ciampa. And then you go to another good match with the tag titles where the titles change hands. Then you go with the Blackitami one, a lot of fast-paced kicking and stuff. A huge, important match with Asuka and Ember Moon. And then, like you said, it's kind of a paint-by-numbers, generic sort of standard WWE match with Rude and McIntyre. And it wasn't bad. It's just it left a little bit to the imagination. And at the end of it, I kind of thought to myself, I think people are going to like this a lot more than they really would have just because we got a title change and just because we got Adam Cole.
Yeah, I think that's what will be mostly remembered for. It'll mostly be remembered for. I think it's fine, though, because NXT demonstrated a lot of different styles of wrestling on this show. And having this one as like the standard main event WWE showdown, I think it works. I think it shows that these two can wrestle the style that they want on the main roster. Which is fine. I mean, part of the reason I like NXT is because the wrestlers seem to have a bit more freedom to wrestle their own style and have that intermesh with each other. And sometimes it doesn't work, sometimes it does. And when it does work, it looks a lot more interesting because it's not the same thing that you see week in, week out in WWE. Whereas,
and speaking of that main roster thing, I mean, Bobby Roode.
That's
come up now.
I'm slightly more moving towards the idea that maybe he's Goldust protege. The more I think about it, the more it makes sense. Even though people think that, well, people will be right in thinking that Roode doesn't need to have that. But I just think the idea of him going in as NXT's like guiding star, the biggest star of NXT, and he moves into WWE and he has Goldust as in the director's chair directing this new like guiding light, and eventually he'd break away from Goldust because he's too big for that. But I just don't see him going into the main event straight away.
I actually don't want him to go into the main event right away.
No, I wouldn't either. It's too much.
I'd really like to see him. If I had my pick, well, let's put it this way: this is not taking into account how do you balance out everybody on the roster. But if you're going to tell me, let's move up Bobby Roode on Monday or Tuesday night, I think I'd go straight to Tuesday night. And I think I'd go the United States title match with Styles.
That'd be amazing. Like, imagine all the TNA executives just crying, seeing that happening in WWE.
They're sitting backstage, they're watching this, and then they're just like, son of a bitch.
Dixie Carr eating
ice cream. How come nobody cared?
Dixie Carr eating ice cream on her couch, just curled up in a ball. But I think
this title change though with McIntyre because it does open that up to get Bobby Roode on the main roster because he is somebody that I think they need to move up like right now.
I think McIntyre looked good in this match. I think the match built up to a very nice end. It was slow for the most part, but it built up to a nice conclusion. And I think it tells a story of redemption for McIntyre in terms of the way that his WWE career went, and now he's back as a champion in WWE. I think it works.
Yeah, I think so.
And I think him and Cole have some good matches, so that's always good to look forward to.
They look close enough to each other that it's like, if we get Asuka versus Kairi Sane and Drew McIntyre versus Adam Cole,
yeah,
it's like, what are we going to get else on the card? Akam versus the Razor? It's like, oh my god, I just got it.
Yeah, it's Occam's Razor, right?
Holy shit. It took me that fucking long mispronouncing their names, Akam and Razor, and the Occam's Razor. Holy shit, I'm a fucking idiot.
it's fine. I'm sure you're not the only one that just realized that.
Oh my god. Wait a minute. Hornswoggle wasn't Vince McMahon's kid? It was Vince McMahon all along, Austin? Like... Well, I feel like a jackass, but all the more reason to cut this at the end of the by the end of the night. No yeah. more else to talk about as far as takeover goes. But what would you say is your low point and your high point?
My low point would be, I think, just the pre-show in general. Maybe the musical performances, which is a great thing to say is your worst point of the night.
Yeah, if the thing that you can skip is the part that's the worst, then you're doing a good job, WWE.
I mean, my favorite part was just kind of the variety of the night. The matches were all, they range from good to excellent, so I don't really feel like I should just be giving one precedence over the other. They all delivered in a certain way. And I think the best thing about it was there's so many options now going forward. They've built to the next like stage of NXT, the next faction coming in, the new rivalries, the new ways they can go. And one thing I'm actually looking forward to, going back to like the first match of the night, I think that we might be seeing Gargano and Candice LeRae versus Almas and Vega in the future, which I'd be just so down. I'd be so down for. There's a lot of different ways they can go, and I'm actually just really excited for NXT. They've delivered another excellent show, and they've made me more excited for what the next show is going to be. So it delivered on all counts.
And I totally forgot that Candice LeRae was in that Mae Young Classic, and if she's the wife of Johnny Gargano, so if they brought her in for that, they probably are looking at her as somebody that they'd like to bring into the mix, and that would be a good way to kind of get Zelina Vega starting to wrestle too. Because we do know at some point she's going to wrestle.
Yeah, so yeah, it's just a good way of like building up new ideas. And obviously we've got likely Cole and McIntyre going forward, and then Sanity and
whatever they want to call themselves.
Yeah, Strong. Not Strong.
Fish and O'Reilly.
Fish and O'Reilly, yeah. And see whether Roderick Strong gets in the mix there. We don't know who's going to be debuting on the main roster after this point. Got Asuka still as the NXT champion, seemingly nobody able to topple her. There's a lot to that we just don't know the answer to, but in a good way, not in a case of like, oh, they clearly don't know what way they're going. I think they know where they're going, but we don't know where they're going, and that's the best possible scenario.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to tomorrow night with SummerSlam, telling you guys in advance, I have a feeling I'm going to be a bitter fuck when it comes to some of those things. And when the main roster does things that I can see it coming and it's predictable and boring, or it's unpredictable but I'm very confused about why they would do it, my gut reaction is usually pessimistic, and it's usually like, they're going to fuck this up, and why couldn't they have just done this and whatever. But when you get an NXT takeover like tonight, I'm like, oh, I'm kind of surprised that the Authors of Pain lost, and I'm kind of surprised that Oscar retained, and I'm kind of surprised that Drew McIntyre won, but I'm not worried. And that's what is great about the NXT stuff. I'm sort of like, the pressure's off. It's not the most important thing as far as brands go, so they can kind of have like a little bit of an off month, and it's not going to kill everything, but you get a bad month on the main roster, ugh, it's awful. So I guess you can kind of say kind of in the same boat, where it's like the highlight of the night is just surprises that don't make me feel bad.
Yeah, I think that sums it up. It's like the birthday party surprise, more than, oh god, you pissed on my hand surprise, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
I don't know what scenario it'd be in when you would be pissing on your hands, but I guess that's
at least it would be a surprise. Because I'm not going to expect that in any normal scenario.
Well, it's like when you, I guess like this, in the area would be like if you fall asleep, if you're just like half asleep and you go to the bathroom and you're just like, oh, I didn't realize I just pissed all over myself type thing. Oh, this is a bad surprise. This is SummerSlam. Oh, God.
Let's make it the equivalent of you got a fart and you're in public and you let one out and you go, oh, man, I'm so surprised. Nobody heard it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't smell. And then you get the other farts where you go, well, I'm going to have to make a trip to the bathroom and figure out some way to clean myself. The main roster, those are the shards.
Yeah. SummerSlam's the follow-through to what NXT was.
Yeah. So hopefully by tomorrow night, we're coming back and we're in more jovial spirits and laughing about how we were wrong and that SummerSlam was amazing and stuff. But If not, at least you got NXT TakeOver, where we were giving it all pretty much just a big thumbs up. And yep. It'll be interesting to see where they go going forward with all these different people, whether it's the people that looked like they were going to be coming up to the main roster, or people like Asuka, whoever she is.
Yeah.
Charlie Caruso's backside and everything else that we got. Anything else you want to talk about?
I'm just looking forward to SummerSlam, even though I have reservations about it and I know the build hasn't been bad. I want SummerSlam to be good. I desperately want SummerSlam to be good because I'm going to be sitting in front of it for 6 hours, and if it isn't good, then I'm going to be even more salty than usual. And it's not a case like, oh, I was looking forward to NXT and it was good, and I'm like wishing for SummerSlam to be bad, even though we kind of expect it to be not as good. We still want it to be better.
Right.
So I'm hoping that it delivers, and there's at least like 3 or 4 matches on the SummerSlam card that I really think could outshine anything that NXT did tonight, even though NXT was fantastic.
Here's hoping. So everybody, make sure you leave your comments below. Tell us what you thought about NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 3, whether you agree or you disagree with us, keep it civil. And make sure you hit that subscribe button if you haven't done that already. Make sure you also ring that bell and check off that you want those notifications so you can get the updates of when we do post our post show for SummerSlam 2017, which will be in roughly about 24 hours since when I'm recording this right now. This, of course, is going to take a little bit of time to upload and stuff, so don't look at your clock and go by that.
It'll be slightly later. SummerSlam won't even be over by this point.
Maybe not. I mean, it's 11:41 at the moment right now, and they do have a little bit of an overrun every once in a while. So it depends. When you start seeing messages from me that say, "Motherfucker, Brock Lesnar retained," then you'll know that it's probably the end of the night. Anything as far as plugs go that you want to say?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at WeekMeister14. I was live tweeting NXT TakeOver tonight for Small Cat Moment. I'll be doing the same for SummerSlam tomorrow. And you can check out all the articles on smallcatmoment.com that we've got going out during this weekend and throughout the week. So check it out.
Yeah, definitely hit up Callum when he's doing that. It's at Small Cat Moment. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Both at Smarkout Moment, and keep the kind of discussion going there. And if another thing that you guys should participate in, as far as like just talking throughout the pay-per-views and stuff, if you don't have a Twitter account but you have a Facebook account, hit us up at facebook.com/groups/TheMegaManiacs, because that's where we do the live chats for that thing. And you can also leave comments on the live running results for what's the name of the pay-per-view? SummerSlam, that's what it is. For some reason I was just gonna call it Survivor Series.
It's SummerShot.
It's close enough. It's at SummerFest.
Mm.
So smartcatmoment.com, you'll find everything that you need to find. And that's it for this edition. So thanks for listening, everybody. This has been another Smart Cat Moment, and we're being counted out.